This is the Secrets of Spiritual Sex podcast, expanding our experience of sex, intimacy, and relationships with tools, tips, and techniques from industry experts and real-life conversation. I am your host, Nikki Rhodes.
So, welcome to this episode of Secrets of Spiritual Sex, where I'm thrilled to announce my, to introduce my dear friend, Tony Thorne, an incredible being whom I've witnessed journey really authentically through the past, what would it be, 4 or 5 years?
I think it's longer than that.
Wow.
I think it's longer than that.
Yeah, I met Tony at a really important time in my life, a time that I share quite often, quite often about, actually just the eve of my wedding. And I met Tony and he was my hairdresser. And I sat there and I said, I'm getting married and this is who I am and this is what I know to be true. And he said, oh, I'm Tony and I'm a hairdresser and this is what I know to be true. And then 6 or 12 months later, whenever it was, I went back and I said, look, Tony, it's all different. It's all fucked. It's all changed. It's all over. And we really connected from that point on in a really honest and truthful way, despite having really, really different pasts and really different journeys. And I always find you to be deeply authentic in your sharing. And I wanted to call you into this episode of the podcast and look at some really prevalent topics surrounding that journey out of sex addiction, the journey towards living a life of more sexual fulfillment and acknowledgement of the sacredness of sex, the journey out of trauma, and that sort of thirst for connection at any cost to a journey of more centeredness and a more sort of embodied acceptance of the role of intimacy. And you have such a huge amount of wisdom on this topic. So welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Nikki.
So Tony, where did it begin? Where did it begin for you? In terms of your journey towards this, towards a more encompassing, more expansive view of sexuality, what would you say?
It probably started from conception, but I mean, that's, you know, we can go there later. But I think I remember the time that it was where I went, enough, I'm done. I was 26, 27. I was doing a haircut on a woman in a salon, and I was on the come down from a 3-day bender.
Right.
And I couldn't remember what I'd done.
Wow.
And I remember sitting there and she'd asked me for a particular hairstyle that I was just like, oh, God, if I have to do another Rachel 90s haircut, I think I'm going to be sick. And I just said to her, no, I don't want to do this. And what I was actually saying was no to myself. And in the end, she got the Rachel haircut and she left. And I remember going home that night going, you need to sort your shit out. And there has to be more than what you've been doing, because I was just so unhappy with what I was doing in my life. The bizarre thing is, when everyone was looking in at what I was doing, I was at the height of my career.
Wow.
You know, I was doing covers of magazines, I was doing catwalk shows, I was working with some of the best designers in New Zealand. I was photographed in magazines doing like models and, you know, all the rest of it. And so from an outside looking in, was a super glamorous life, and I was dying.
Wow.
And I remember saying to myself, there has to be more than this.
So your benders included, I'm sure, substance abuse and alcohol, but in a sexual sense, what did these benders look like?
So these benders, basically what they looked like was I was doing everything that I could to disconnect from everything around me, including my body. And so the benders were just, I basically went into the space of dying each time I went into it, completely disconnecting from what was going on around me. So whether it was drugs, whether it was alcohol, whether it was spending, whether it was sex, you know, whatever it was basically what I was doing everything I could to try and remove myself from humanity and to get out.
why do we do this, do you think? Like, why do we, when everything can be so perfect, when we can be so successful, yet we use sex, we use all of this to disembody. What are we acting from? What were you acting from?
What I was acting from was trauma.
Okay.
So deep, deep wounding trauma that I refuse to acknowledge.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing that I know now that I didn't know then is I was in a constant state of victimhood.
Right.
And so all of these things that I was trying to do to fill myself
mm-hmm.
was coming from a place of poor me, poor wounded me, poor victim me. And I didn't know that at the time. And so, you know, it was all like, poor me, poor me, poor me, victim, 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 and then wanting to disassociate from that.
Right.
So, and so the ultimate victimhood of trying to kill myself.
Yeah, right.
You know, the martyrdom of trying to kill myself and the victimhood of trying to kill myself to get out of not feeling.
Sex, when we're trying to escape our body, sex when we're outside of our body, what was that like for you?
So it's really interesting because I was raped at 15
mm-hmm.
and I then became a sex worker at around 17. I was also working full time
mm-hmm.
and I was sex working on the sly. So I had this double life.
Yeah.
And I remember after the rape had happened, because it was pre-law reform,
mm-hmm.
so it was still illegal, and you know, you couldn't tell anybody, and there was all that kind of like,
you were raped by a man?
By two, actually.
Raped by two men.
My first ever sexual experience, so I was 15, I'd left home, I was living in Australia, my mother lives in Australia, so I was living over there, and I'd been kicked out of home,
mm-hmm.
And I was living with some people that I thought was super cool.
Right.
And they were the first queer people I'd ever met, so there were men and women living in this space. And we went to a party. And I wasn't aware of this at the time, but I'd been taken to this party because I was fresh meat.
Right.
And still a virgin.
Mm-hmm.
And these men who had heard about me wanted to be the first people to tap it.
Of course,
yeah. And so I was given date drugs
mm-hmm.
and woke up tied up to a bed
mm-hmm.
being raped by two men completely unconsensually, and I remember at that point just zoning out.
Okay.
And because it was so painful.
Right.
And I, you know, as an innocent 15-year-old kid at the time, I didn't even know you could have anal sex.
Mm.
You know, and
where were you at with your own journey of sexuality at that time? Like, did you identify as any particular orientation, or were you still establishing that for yourself? Where were you?
So at that point, I mean, I just turned 15.
Mm-hmm.
I was still coming to terms with the fact that I was gay.
Okay.
And even though I no longer identify with those words now, or back then, I was a 15-year-old kid in a highly religious family that was living in an era in Australia and New Zealand pre-law reform where it was illegal and you could be arrested and thrown in jail for the mere act of loving someone of the same sex.
So you were coming to terms with the fact that how you loved and how you felt was shameful, wrong, and illegal.
Yep.
That was pre the trauma of rape.
That was pre the
trauma
of rape. Then the trauma of rape. And then I became a sex worker and continuously re-traumatized the original trauma.
Taught yourself to further
disembody
out of this deeply, deeply vulnerable experience. Yeah.
So in queer terms, I became like a submissive bottom, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I would go off to clients who wanted to, I'm going to be really crass, but fuck someone up the ass.
Yeah.
And so I threw my legs in the air and went, cool, there's $150, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or whenever. And so there was never any choice in that for me.
Well,
okay, I'm going to change that. Actually, I chose to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I didn't think there was any choice. I thought, this is what gay boys do, because my first experience was anal penetration from the rape. And I was like, this is what gay sex is about. You get fucked up the ass. And for years and years and years and years with my sexual addiction, that's what I was. I was considered a bottom. And I don't identify with that now, and I don't play into that now. But essentially it was roll back and let as many men fuck me up the ass as they could be. You know, I'd cruise bogs, you know, toilets basically. Mm-hmm. I would cruise sex on site venues like parks. I would cruise, you know, sex clubs. You know, I would have sex in toilets.
Yeah.
You know, I still walk through Auckland City now at old nightclubs and like, I had sex in toilets there and I had sex in that corner and I had sex in that alleyway. And it was just this continuous throwing your legs in the air. But at the same time, I was becoming more and more angry at myself for allowing myself to be in that position.
So sex addiction for you arose out, you know, would you say, of this desire to find a power within the deep trauma and the deep vulnerability that you had experienced? Do you think it was a sort of like attempt at gaining control what did it mean to you?
Later on it became that. Mm. So in the early stages it was just like lay back, let them fuck you, get it over and done with, and as many as you could.
But there's a power in that, right?
There is a power in that because actually, you know, like technically within the queer community, you know, tops and bottoms and then there's versatile, there's a real power play in the top-bottom roles. And so for me, you know, it was just like, if you love me, you're going to penetrate me.
Okay, so it's an association with love.
Love, with affection, being accepted, being attractive enough.
Worthy, wanted,
all of those patterns that were playing out. It was just like, if you're going to penetrate me, then I feel worthy.
Right.
But then what started happening is, as time moved on, as I started getting really angry at the power dynamic.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I didn't want people to fuck me. I didn't want people to penetrate me. And I didn't want to be the submissive.
And at that point there, Tony, where could you turn to? It sounded as though, you know, what was your education? What sources, what references, what resources did you have to turn to regarding that there's like more to it or help for this or sex doesn't have to look like that in the LGBT community back then? Was there any of that available?
So, you know, I mean, I couldn't go to my parents and say, hey, mummy and daddy, you know, can we, even though my parents, bless their cotton socks, and my father drew beautiful illustrations on sex education for us.
Amazing.
What he didn't realise is that his child was gay. And when he found out, he was like, oh, those drawings are a waste of time. But there was no one that I could go to and say, hey, you know, is this how we do it? How do we do it? And so at that time, the only references were porn.
Yeah.
And the only references that I would have is my lived experience of sex, which had been abusive. And so, you know, being raped and being a sex worker and then going, well, is this what it is for us as gay men?
Right.
And at that time, the answer was yes. It's very different now, obviously, but there's also an element of it still the same.
There is.
You know, like, as a society and as a humanity that we live in, humanity consciously, the primary sex references is heteronormative.
It is.
You know, a male and a female, and they do their thing, and then they have a baby. And I'm generalising when I say that, because not all heterosexual people or couples or beings are like that. That's the narrative.
Yeah.
And so the narrative that I learned, you know, coming from a religious background, coming from, you know, mainstream society's background, is everything that I was feeling, everything that I was doing, every cock that I sucked or fucked was wrong.
Wow.
And every man that I loved or loved me, it was wrong.
Yeah.
And just that in itself, the fact that I chose to love another man was wrong. And every reference point for hundreds of years validated that.
And what does that say about your worthiness, right, on this planet? What does that say about, what does that do to one's self-esteem?
Yeah, I mean, it's different for everybody, but for my self-worth, particularly around sexuality, was that I didn't have any.
Wow.
I didn't have any self-worth. I didn't feel empowered by sexuality. In fact, I felt, especially as time moved on, and, you know, because we're chunking through some periods of time here where actually for me, I was repulsed by sex. And if someone touched me, I would literally, my whole body would freeze or go into a fear state. and it didn't matter who it was, just my whole body was just like, oh, keep away from me, keep away from me. And I went through years of not having sex. Because I was like, don't come near me.
Yeah, this is post the addiction?
This is post the addiction.
The addiction, post the huge feelings of anger that started to arise, came a period, right, of, wow, this is full on. It's interesting how sex seems to be like the go-to answer for solving feelings of worthiness or accessing a power or... It can be played, right?
Absolutely. Like, I remember going to sex clubs in my 20s and 30s.
Right.
And even actually up until my late 30s,
yeah.
You know, the more cock I could suck and the more blowjobs I could give in a night meant that I was worthy.
Wow.
And I would leave a sex club and be like, yeah, baby, I just fucking blew 3, 4, 5, 6 dudes in a night. And wore it like a badge of honour.
Where does that come from, do you think? Because I know within heteronormative, the narrative there, there is that, like, oh, little black book, kind of, like, had a lot, meant I'm a player. A popular culture really supports that. But what's at the root of that, do you think? Why do we think the more... Because often these experiences, 6 blowjobs a night, is sort of like eating a whole lot of cheeseburgers, right? An analogy I use a lot of the time, that kind of like fast food, immediate kind of boost, easy to get, super warm in the tummy, and then later on it's kind of not that great, you know?
It's funny because I would leave after getting my badge of honour and I'd be driving home and I'd be in tears.
Wow.
And the internal dialogue... was just rampantly vicious within my internal dialogue of like, how could you do that? Why, you know better than this. Da, 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 da. There was all the stuff that was going through. And what it was filling was this deep, deep wounding that I needed to fill.
Mm-hmm.
That no penis or man's body was ever going to do. And it wasn't until I got to a point with myself where it was just like, actually, you need to penetrate yourself.
Wow.
You need to fulfill those voids, you know, your oral void, your anal void. You know, the oral from a chakra perspective, you know, like I was blocking my expression through putting penises in my mouth. And then at the same time, I was shoving dicks up my ass, which is the place where we come from security. And the base of who we are was being filled by other people.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was stuffing my form of expression. So on those two major chakra levels, I was just shutting myself down.
So this is where you be... This is phenomenal. It's the fact that you were able to go from this extreme to opening the doors and stepping bravely into the work of looking at yourself, at realizing that you were the common denominator here, that radical self-responsibility was like the only way forward. And no matter how painful it was to start looking within and to realize exactly the effect of that kind of behavior on yourself, can you speak to that switch? Like, what made you get there?
Oh, God, what made me get... So what made me get there was a relationship separation.
Okay.
So...
Heartbreak
got me
We
there.
Haven't spoken about the heart yet.
We haven't spoken about the heartbreak. So I remember it would have been maybe a year, not quite, a year after me and the ex had separated.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still broken by this.
Yeah.
And I just got to a point where I was just like, I think I was 40. It was 40 because it was 10 years ago. So I was 40 and I was just like, enough of this bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Enough of crying every night. Enough of being sick over the toilet over this.
Wow.
And, you know, I had lost a huge amount of weight. I was just functioning. And I remember a really good friend of mine came round and he looked at me and he just said, you've got to fucking sort your shit out. And so anyway, I rang someone who has become pivotal in my journey of conscious awareness.
Yeah.
His name's Keith, very good friend of mine now. And at first he was just a coach, and I'd met him on a spiritual journey. So one of the things that me and my ex-partner did is we ran spiritual journeys overseas. And so we were in Mexico, we were in the pyramids, and Keith was one of the presenters. And for some reason, I rang him. And I just went, I don't care what it takes, I don't care what it costs, I don't care what rock we have to lift, what cave we have to go in, what I said, I'm ready to go into the dark night of the soul. And I had, you know, I'd read the book, but I wasn't prepared for what was about to happen. And we went there. And we literally, we lifted every rock, opened every cupboard, shone a torch on every dark corner.
Wow.
Because I was just like, I do not ever want to be in a position where this happens to me again without me choosing it. And so that's what happened with that. That's what did it.
So it reaches a point often a point of struggle and of darkness, and the trust and the bravery to call someone or to reach out or to start really looking within. And just for listeners out there who are stuck in this path, or you know, it's a sort of few steps behind where you've got to now, your encouragement would be to turn in.
Turn in and keep going.
Turn in and keep going. Because you can turn in and you can turn back out.
Right.
And go, look, I'll... Later.
Listen.
Later.
And if Keith ever listens to this, I need to preface this. There were many, many, many times where I turned away and went, oh, I'm not fucking doing this.
Quit.
I'm done. We're done. I don't want to do this anymore. I've had enough. I've done enough work in my life. I've done enough processing. I've done enough But every time I came back and went, oh, okay, let's do this.
So picking a teacher or picking someone to help you with this, what do people need to look out for? Because I know that there are, you know, not all of it is really well-intentioned. There are some schools or some teachers that, I don't know, that people have had not so good experiences with. And when you have someone, you know, vulnerable, when someone's been hugely expressed or... you know, put in these positions and they're feeling like anything will do, then they're a great target for a malintentioned practitioner. For you, what did you look for and what made you trust Keith, and what should listeners really look out for when they start this journey?
You know what? The really interesting thing is, you know, I just need to take a step back for a minute. I had been seeing a spiritual coach and spiritual mentor for probably about 7 years before I met Keith. And that person ended up being the person that had the affair with my ex-partner, which caused the separation of my friendship with him and then my relationship with my ex-partner. And so, you know, when you ask me that question, I'm like, you know, yes, I can talk about my trust with Keith now, but I also trusted this other person. Who portrayed me. And, you know, I don't like using that word betrayal because it has a victim space around it. But, you know, for most people it was a form of betrayal. So to answer your question, I think you really have to go in, really settle into your heart before you allow a practitioner to come into your world and really go into your body. And is this a full fuck yes for me? Is there any uncertainty? Am I not sure? And actually being like, is this about me or is it about them? And there are aspects with that where if it feels really uncomfortable, like there's some things that I've done with Keith and some trainings that I've done which have been incredibly uncomfortable, and I'm like, I have to do this. And so that basically for me, the minute you get a red flag or that little niggly voice says get out, then trust it and get the fuck out. It's as simple as that.
It's part of the journey, you know. You're wanting to refine your own messaging system and trust the intuition and say, all right, here you go. Even though this is the spiritual path and not the sex addiction path, there's going to be a test there for you and even choosing that next step. For sure. So making sure it resonates, making sure you read up thoroughly on reviews and trust what people are saying about certain...
and ask other people, you know, like if I was to do some stuff around sexuality, I'd be like, okay, have you been to this person?
Yes.
Have you had any experiences with this person? What, you know, what was your whole journey like with this person? And yeah. if they're like, eh, I felt a bit dodgy, then talk into what that was for
totally.
Them to clarify whether it was theirs or the practitioner's stuff.
Yeah, checking a person's...
But definitely do due diligence.
Yeah,
you
awesome.
Know, because otherwise we just... We re-traumatise ourselves.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
And so your journey into this next part, can we speak into that? When did you start to realise that sex could have a different meaning or a different form or could be an expansive experience compared to what you had experienced?
So we need to backtrack just slightly from that, but I will come to it. So I was in a workshop and someone had said to me, Tony, you need to become embodied. You need to get into your body.
What the hell does that mean, right?
Well, that's exactly what I asked. I was just like, I don't know what you're fucking talking about. I had no concept of it whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So I was introduced, and it was actually suggested that I go and do some embodiment stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even know what that meant.
No.
So I researched queer embodiment, gay embodiment, and basically there is very little in the world.
Wow.
Very little. So I made a conscious choice to do embodiment trainings that were primarily targeted towards heteronormative people,
mm-hmm.
or beings. People, it sounds so patronising. But heteronormative beings. Mm-hmm. And I chose that because I didn't want to be distracted by the sex that I knew of being with sex with men.
Okay,
so I knew if I was doing it with heterosexual couples, I didn't really want to have sex with a woman, and the boys weren't going to be interested.
Perfect, yeah.
Because there was, you know, there was plenty of women there, and you know, they wouldn't be doing it with me. So I went and basically went and did years of training with embodiment. Did a certificate in embodiment counselling, which was a year-long training. Did a whole lot of other embodiment trainings and just submerged myself in embodiment. So breath work, dance, movement, sound, lots of different kind of rituals and experiences to become more embodied.
Because you had left your body time and time again, right? Because you'd used sex and anything to do with the physical as an escape. There was this this necessity to dive back in.
To dive.
Would you say?
Well, so how it came across to me was this: I'd spent years of cognitive therapy.
Right, cognitive, up in the mind,
thinking, like releasing trauma,
addiction.
You know, like it was all cognitive, and the minute it was just like, Tony, get into your body, I had to go back and revisit it all. And I remember at that point, I was just like, I don't know if I want to revisit all this stuff again.
Yeah.
But what it was explained to me from the chakras in the body, it was like literally I'd cut myself in half.
Yeah,
so from here up was really well-tuned.
Mm.
And from here down, didn't exist.
Yeah.
Because this was all feelings and emotions and trauma. And I was just like, I don't want to go near that. I've just spent 20 years trying to not deal with that.
Yeah.
But I had to go in and deal with it. And so all these embodiment trainings that I went to, and it was, you know, I'm going to mention Keith again, but it was him that mentioned it. He said, you've cut yourself in half.
Yeah, right.
You know, three up, three down, but these three, you don't even know what they are. And I remember the first embodiment workshop I ever did, they were like, we're going to do some breath work. Something might come up, something might not. You know, I'm just kind of cutting it short. But I was, you know, doing a... and all this kind of crazy breathwork stuff. And then I started feeling some emotions and I'm like, I was so overwhelmed by what was coming up that it terrified me.
Wow.
And this woman that was doing the workshop said, no, but you need to go into that. And I'm like, excuse my language, but I'm like, bitch, you're crazy if you want to go into that. But I forced myself to go into it. And because what I hadn't realised is, you know, with all, you know, just to mention the rape and the sex work stuff, I had traumatised my body so much that I didn't even know what my feelings were. And so, you know, when I came to have sex, you know, someone would be caressing my arm, I couldn't even feel it. So that when I started becoming more conscious around my sexuality and more in tune with my body, I remember we were doing an exercise and someone touched me in here and just ran their arm in here, and I almost had a full body orgasm.
Wow.
And I was just like, they weren't even touching my, my genitals.
No.
It was just a part of my arm, and I was like, you know, my whole body was starting to vibrate. And then I also did some like soul integration, physicality stuff. So for me, it's very much the spiritual and the physical, bringing them together.
Yeah.
And once I started to bring them together and integrate them, now, you know, like everything is a feeling.
Yeah.
You know, and everything is a vibration. And,
yeah,
you know,
walking into a room, you've got to, okay, am I happy here, am I not?
Am I
so
not?
In tune.
So in tune with what's going on. And, you know, I can already start to feel it as we're talking, because my whole body starts to shake.
Wow. From a man so disconnected or so unaware that the arm could be as orgasmic as the cock. This is powerful, right?
Right? Totally. And so, you know, one of the most beautiful things that came out of me doing all these embodiment trainings is actually going into the divine feminine.
Yeah.
And
within, right?
Within. So I'm getting emotional just even like thinking about it, but I had so much rage towards the feminine.
Wow.
And for lots of reasons, you know.
Your own, right?
My own rage, my rage towards my mother,
yes.
just rage towards the feminine.
Who you were meant to want to fuck.
Who I was meant to want to fuck. But also as a gay man, you know, like being a feminine male.
Yeah.
Hell no. You know, and it's interesting, you know, that both of you and I are sitting here in black, but, you know, I wear black as still today as a bit of an armour, which, you know, is a bit dumb really at 50. But I remember when I got down on my hands and knees and surrendered into my feminine, that's when it all started to fully integrate. Because without the feminine, I wasn't able to feel the touch.
No, can't receive.
Can't receive.
Right, the feminine receives.
Totally.
And if you're not in touch with that part of yourself, you're literally missing out on a fulfilling sexual experience. Full stop.
Full stop. So the divine feminine for me became this portal into a larger picture of my consciousness.
Wow.
And then for me, sex became so much more different.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember the first time I had sex with someone after doing some trainings.
Mm.
And we'd spend a week about the divine penetration.
Mm.
And the penetration of energy, and the penetration of the body, and the sacredness of penetration. I couldn't have sex with this person. I had no idea this was going to happen. It was a casual hookup.
Yeah.
After me doing a week-long, you know, embodiment thing around sacred sexuality. And I'm just like, I'm really sorry, but I can't do this. And I had to send this beautiful man home. And I'm just like, he's just like, what? What?
I'm here.
Really? Like, hello? And I'm just like, no. I can't penetrate you. I don't want you to penetrate me. This is not a full embodied yes for me. You're really cute, but I can't do this. And I tried to, you know, I tried
to push through that.
I tried to push through. I tried to penetrate him.
Oh.
And I tried to allow him to penetrate me. Like, and I, for the first time in my life, my cock went soft.
Wow.
Because it wasn't a full embodied yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened for me then is, you know, as someone that used to be really proud of the amount of men that I would fuck or suck or hook up with, and jumping on Grindr and Scruff and, like, you know, hooking up with lots of different guys, actually going, I don't want to do that anymore. Now, I'm not saying I don't still do that occasionally.
Yeah, of course.
But there's definitely a definition between, if it's a hookup, it's a hookup.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a change of mindset.
Yeah, right.
And I kind of almost step out of the divine sacredness.
Yeah.
okay, this is what we're doing.
But it's still a yes.
But
it's
still a
divine
yes.
Divine in within all of your centres, totally. In that respect. Yeah.
So I'm not having sex with anyone that I don't want to.
Yeah.
Or that I'm like, there's not
you
a full yes to.
To
it.
Yeah.
But if it's a hookup, it's a hookup.
Cool, yeah.
But does the true desire of my body and my soul want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Nah.
Yeah.
Not really. Even though it is a yes, mm-hmm. there's also a piece, you want more than that.
Yeah.
You want a deeper form of intimacy, a deeper form of connection. You know, I want to be able to, and I, you know, I have done this, I want to be able to sit and be held.
Yeah, for sure.
And be seen in all of it,
mm-hmm.
and all the messiness of it all, and all the beauty of it.
You don't want to wear a mask every time you have sex. When we have sex, it's such a beautiful opportunity to really show up. To show ourselves, and we show up with someone in the sexual realm, we show up in life so much more authentically, right?
And you've kind of hit the nail on the head. We show up in everything.
Yeah.
The totality of who we are shows up.
Yeah. The tears, the mess,
tears,
the joy.
The joy, the bliss. Anger, the rage, the celebration,
mm-hmm.
all of it is who we are,
yeah.
and what we want to show up with. And, you know, all the trainings that I've done, I've had experiences where I've been able to show up with people.
Mm.
And it's fundamentally changed the way that I relate with people now.
Wow, yeah, totally.
You know,
who you choose as friendships, where you choose to work, right? It affects everything.
Every aspect of my life.
So when you get to know yourself, when you dive deep, when you commit to that, like, deep self-inquiry, you jump back on your soul's path, right? You get a slap if you're not on it.
Well, for me now, it's not a slap.
Okay.
It's a full-on baseball bat over the head. You're not listening.
Once you've tapped in.
Once you're tapped in, you can't tap out.
You go, no, but I just want a casual one. I want to do that for a little bit. It's like, it's not serving.
It's not serving.
I feel you.
You know, and even though, you know, we talk about the full yes with the casual
mm-hmm.
sex that I might still have, there is a massive cleanup afterwards for me. So
okay.
energetically, there's a cleanup. Spiritually, there's a cleanup.
Yeah,
because
after being with someone.
After being
with someone. Speak to us through that.
Well, because every time you have sex with someone, you connect on an energetic soul level.
For sure.
But then you also connect with everyone that they've ever had sex with.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I've had sex with someone that it hasn't maybe been fully right.
Yeah.
I have to clean out all that mess
yeah.
that I've now, because I wanted a 5-10 minute
right.
shag,
yes.
and because, you know, I couldn't quite comfortably sit with myself,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't breathe through it, so
you
I hooked up.
You want to masturbate in someone, right?
Yeah, right.
With someone.
So then there's this whole journey of cleaning up the energetic mess that goes with that. And if I do have casual sex, I'm very clear about the fact that after I've had casual
mm-hmm.
sex and it's a full embodied yes, there's about a 2-hour cleanup afterwards.
With
and
the person?
With me.
By yourself?
By myself.
Nice, yeah.
I go in, I meditate, I release all the energetic threads, I go through and I sit with why I did it, why
yeah.
I didn't do it. And I go into the self-evaluation.
Yeah, nice.
Why did you do that this time?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about making me wrong or judging myself, because there was nothing wrong with what I did.
No.
But I really want to explore, okay, why? What was that about?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you feel the need to hook up with somebody?
Yeah.
You know, and okay, cool. Oh, okay, I didn't see that little bit.
Yeah, nice.
I didn't see that little bit. Oh, I'll remember that for next time.
I think people forget that, you know, when we connect with someone sexually, it's not just skin on skin, rub, rub, rub. Or if it is just that, then, or if you're just acknowledging that, then you're not acknowledging the multitude of other aspects at play and other links and other connections and ways that energies can hook and leak and any kind of look into the multidimensionality of intimacy shows us that. And we're just not taught. I work with so many women, and I'm sure actually so many gay men as well, who say there is an energy in there. You know, when you are penetrated, the womb is so porous. It does hold on to things,
mm-hmm.
right? Energies can come into it quite easily. It's designed to expand and contract. And we know our anus is deeply porous. It can absorb so much, even more than the yoni walls. No one knows, or it's just not common knowledge, how to clear ex-lovers, right? And you've just explained,
yeah.
Meditate, release the hooks through your mind. Your intention is deeply powerful. You don't need some shaman or some crystal to do it for you.
No.
To sit with yourself afterwards, if you'd like things to change or you see a habit coming, be with self honestly.
Every time.
Yeah.
Every time. And, you know, I just go through, like, I visualize my body. A physical body and my auric body, and I go through and cleanse it all out.
Yeah.
And
that is just putting white light through,
just
right?
White light
into your shoulder, down to my elbow, into my hand. We're going to do an episode on this because it's just so powerful.
So powerful.
Yeah, we can walk around feeling like we're not even in our own body.
Yeah.
And I can imagine for a sex addict or someone who's deeply in that space that they are literally outside of their body in a lot of that experience. And they need fast food and drugs and a fast lifestyle or, you know, more and more and more and more and more.
Yeah.
To avoid it.
You're right. And, you know, and to go back to what you were saying about, you know, the clearing with, and I'm probably going to get slammed for this,
mm-hmm.
but I'm okay with it. I'm going to say it anyway. With gay men particularly.
Yeah.
We are, as a consciousness layer within the realm of sexuality,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just talking about gay men here, I'm not talking about the other diverse, you know, flow of
mm-hmm.
diverse sexuality that's out there, because I don't have that experience. But as gay men, you know, we are generally, and I'm generalising,
mm-hmm.
quite promiscuous.
Yeah.
And so when you think about 7.8 billion people in the world, 10% of them being queer.
Yeah.
You're a maths person. How many is that?
That's a lot.
It's a fucking lot. Let's just go with that. That's a lot. And when you think about it, every man that you sleep with,
yeah.
you're sleeping with 10% of 7.8 billion
yeah.
people.
Yeah. There's a big web.
A big web.
Mm.
And, you know, the wounding within queer consciousness,
mm-hmm.
is a massive wounding.
Why?
Oh,
because it was illegal 20 years ago?
Because it was illegal 20 years ago.
Because it's not the norm, so it's the other?
It's not the norm, it's the other. But there's so many different things. We're going to go there. Okay, so we have Lady Gaga.
Yes.
His song, famous, I Was Born That Way.
Yeah, right.
I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
As a, because I don't even like using the word gay, but as a gay man, because I do have sex with men,
mm-hmm.
but as a, you know, gay man, as I said, I struggle with the languaging. I no longer believe that I was born that way.
Mm-hmm.
I believe on a soul level that I chose
mm-hmm.
this path.
Yeah.
I chose to incarnate as a male
mm-hmm.
in this body,
mm-hmm.
and I chose to learn how to love men.
Now, because we can't prove that that's wrong or that that's right, it's a bloody powerful way to show up on this world. Because you're assuming full responsibility for all choices.
All choices.
So radical self-responsibility is a big thing I talk about. And this idea is something that I too subscribe to. A challenge comes my way and I say, aha, did not see that coming, but soul, you definitely chose that, right?
Yes,
I, at some point, called that in for this path and this journey of
yeah.
healing. And I think it's powerful.
You know, and I think to, you know, what you were saying before about, you know, the messiness of gay sex and the wounding of gay sex, I fully believe, I'm really, really passionate about this, I fully believe that the minute queer people, queer beings, and this could be any of
mm-hmm.
us, queer beings take full ownership for, I chose to incarnate as this and not play the victim of, I was born this way,
mm-hmm.
because the minute I was born this way comes out, there's no consciousness in that, there's no ownership in that,
wow.
there's no power in that.
Yeah, right.
The minute I took back the power of, like, I chose to be this, it completely changed my dynamic around who I was. I basically cancelled my queer membership.
Wow.
Because I was just like, I no longer wanna box myself into, I was born this way,
mm-hmm.
with the rest of queer beings on this planet. And I took back my power and I'm like, no, fuck that.
Mm-hmm.
Victim bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
I chose it and I'm going to fucking own it and fully embody it. Completely changed the way
that
I
is
relate.
Deeply powerful, Tony. That is deeply powerful. For listeners out there, you want to step out of any unhealthy sexual experience or acting in a certain way. That there is key in advice that I think is deeply empowering. If I was to say now, you know, just before we finish, a secret, right? This podcast is The Secrets of Spiritual Sex. Can I put you on the spot and
put
say,
me on the spot.
If you had a secret to give away, and you might have just given it away, I think, but if you had a secret to spiritual sex, what is your secret to gaining or expanding into the possibilities of experience we have as humans, or maybe a message for the queer community there?
So I'm glad you see that, because the secret that I have, and one of the things that I've been working on with myself for the last few years, is to queer men, and if queer men are listening to this, I'm probably going to be like slammed, but it's okay. Cancel your fucking membership to the gay club, because essentially we are not gay. We are multi-dimensional conscious beings having an experience.
Wow.
And the more we hold on to the limiting identification of a word that was made up 100 years ago by people that don't even understand who we are, we stay trapped in that modality, in that model. And my secret is the minute you break open the identification model and the identity model, the freedom that comes from that, which means that even as, and I'm going to use this languaging, as a gay man, I can love someone that's in a female body.
Mm.
And I can have an incredible experience intimately with someone that's in the female form. That's someone that is in a trans form.
Mm-hmm.
That's someone that is in a male form.
Mm-hmm.
On all these multiple dimensional layers, by breaking away from this identity that I'm gay.
Mm-hmm. Damn! I think that's powerful and I think it will be well received. Tony, you have been a blessing to interview.
Nice.
This has been
powerful,
and I'm just so, so, so grateful for how honestly you show up, for how brave you are as a being, and for how inspiring your overall story is, and the eloquence with which you tell it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Have you again.
The Secrets of Spiritual Sex was brought to you out of the desire to make accessible the latest research and inspiring developments in the field of sex, intimacy, and relationships. There is so much more to sex than friction and brief peaks, and this podcast seeks to provide a pleasure-based sexual education where potential and curiosity are cultivated. Make sure you subscribe and share this episode with your lovers, your friends, and your family. I'm Nikki Rhodes, a sex and relationship coach, and you can find me on Instagram @_NikkiRhodes_, or jump onto my website for more info on courses, retreats, and one-on-one coaching sessions at www.nikkir.com.